More of Lake Effect Weekend now. I'm Mitch Teich. The NFL season officially got underway on Thursday night, but for most Wisconsinites, it is the Packers Sunday kickoff that really marks the start to the season. Sports contributor Howie Magner joins us to look ahead to the next 16 games at least. Howie, great to see you.
Good to see you, Mitch Teich. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, and I suspect a lot of people are doing pretty well, what with the start of football season this weekend. I want to start with how training camp ended for the Packers, and that was with kind of a quarterback controversy, but not one involving Aaron Rodgers, rather involving the second-string quarterback, which went from being Graham Harrell to being Vince Young to being B.J. Coleman to being none of the above. What was going on there?
Yeah, I guess if you're going to have a quarterback controversy, you want it to involve your backups and not your starting quarterback. I think everybody realizes that Aaron Rodgers is the Packers. The Packers are Aaron Rodgers. The Packers will do as well as Aaron Rodgers does. And as long as he's on the field, you can make the argument that they have the best quarterback in the league and therefore one of the best offenses in the league. So when you've got such certainty there, sometimes you kind of go looking elsewhere to see, okay, where are some of the weaknesses of this team? And the backup quarterback position is certainly one of those. And so, you know, they brought in Vince Young off the street, kind of in the middle of training camp, to provide some competition for Graham Harrell, who had been with the franchise, as well as B.J. Coleman. And by the end of training camp, not a one of them was still on the roster. So apparently the Packers didn't think that any of those guys were capable
of
backing up Aaron Rodgers.
Right. They cut Graham Harrell and everybody said, oh, well, Vince Young has won this competition.
Right.
Then they cut Vince Young and they said, oh, they must see something in B.J. Coleman. And then B.J. Coleman was gone.
Exactly. So whatever they saw in all of those guys, it wasn't enough. And so they were kind of left scrambling. And that's not necessarily unusual at the end of training camp. A lot of guys get cut and maybe some guy gets cut out there that you think would be a better fit for your system. And so the Packers ended up settling on Seneca Wallace, who had been spending some time in the San Francisco 49ers camp. And they also ended up signing Scott Tolzien, the former Wisconsin Badger, to the practice squad. So, and he had spent time with the San Francisco 49ers. So it really was kind of an interesting subplot to the whole Packers training camp. But that's all it was, really, was a subplot. Because once the season starts, people aren't going to be paying a whole lot of attention to the guy who's carrying the clipboard on the sidelines. They're going to be paying attention to Aaron Rodgers. And the things that folks will be complaining about is, did Rodgers hold the ball too long? Why didn't he see that open receiver? Things of that nature.
The Packers looked pretty mediocre during the preseason. Mm-hmm. Were there any concerns for you as you saw the Packers play in the preseason?
It's always hard to kind of get a gauge on how a team is doing in the preseason anyway, because you don't really know how much they're putting out there from an effort standpoint, from a playbook standpoint, things of that nature. With the Packers, it was even more difficult than usual, because not only was that the case, but Aaron Rodgers wasn't really playing any more than one series or two series in every preseason game. The other thing was they really didn't have a lot of their weapons even when the first-teamers were on the field. Jordy Nelson missed the entire preseason. Basically, he played, I think, one series in the final preseason game with a knee injury. He's healthy now and will be playing in the opener. Randall Cobb also missed much of the preseason with an injury. And, you know, you expect he will be healthy and a big part of the offense this year. So I don't know that you necessarily got a realistic picture of what the offense can do. We'll certainly see a different, you know, we'll find out if it was a mirage going forward, because everybody will be healthy and they'll be playing regular minutes in the regular season. And you would assume that the Packers will be, you know, every bit as good, if not better than last year. And one of the big reasons for that is because people like the upgrade that they made to their running game in drafting Eddie Lacy, the rookie running back, who folks expect he's going to provide a dimension of this team that they haven't seen for a few years. The biggest question mark for my money with the offense going into the season is the offensive line. Will they be able to protect the Packers, franchise quarterback in Aaron Rodgers? And Brian Bulaga, who is going to be the starting left tackle, is gone for the season with a knee injury. So ever since that happened, they've kind of been mixing and matching and hoping that some guys who were expected to be backups can perform in starters' roles. So it's going to be kind of a trial by fire for that offensive line, and they're protecting the franchise's most important asset. The most impressive thing I thought from the Packers from a preseason standpoint was how well the defense played. The Packers didn't score very many points offensively during the preseason, but they also didn't give up many either. And that was their big weakness, not only last year, but the last few years. They're getting some players back healthy. Perry, their first-round draft pick last year, is healthy this year. They're hoping he'll provide a bit of more of a pass rush complement to Clay Matthews. So it will be really interesting to see if the defense has finally turned a corner. And if that's the case, if the defense can perform at a level almost as high as the Packers' offense, then they're going to be a really scary team.
There is an obvious parallel to be drawn with the Brewers right now, because the team that is on the field at Miller Park feels a little bit like spring training, part two. And the Brewers have been out of contention, really, for all intents and purposes, for a long time.
Basically since May.
So let's talk about this group of guys that is playing as the Brewers. Is there some use to the Brewers actually getting an extended look at their future playing in the major leagues today?
Yeah, I mean, once you realize that the season is a lost season, then you've got to kind of start looking elsewhere to make the season somewhat valuable in certain ways. And one of the ways you do that is you look at your younger players and you see what you've got. And they've certainly done that with young players like Chris Davis, who stepped into an outfield role after Ryan Braun accepted his suspension. And, without Braun in the picture, they got a chance to see, Chris Davis. And he actually performed pretty well. And then you're looking at a young guy like Scooter Jeanette, who got a chance to come up when Ricky Weeks was lost for a season-ending injury. And Scooter Jeanette has performed quite well when he got his opportunity. So those guys may have played their way into the picture when it comes to next season. And had this not been a lost season, had they been contenders and, everybody had stayed healthy and stayed on the field, then you wouldn't have seen what those guys are really capable of doing at the major league level.
Well, and speaking of guys that have shown something this year, the New York Times about a week and a half ago made the case that even though it probably won't happen, Carlos Gomez might be able to lay claim to some votes anyway for National League MVP. What has Carlos Gomez shown this year?
Well, he's really been one of the team's biggest surprises, and you could say one of the league's biggest surprises, because coming into the season, I think everybody knew that Carlos Gomez was one of the best, if not the best, defensive center fielders in all of baseball. So he had that going for him, and that's really one of the big reasons, probably the main reason, why the Brewers agreed to give him a contract extension before the season started. Well, he came in, he had the comfort of the new contract. He knew that he was going to be an everyday starter in center field, and that really seemed to help his offensive game. And he came out and is among the league leaders, if not the team leader in home runs on this team as well. And, here was a guy who you weren't even sure if you wanted him in the upper half of the order. And he became one of the biggest run producers in your lineup, and they were batting him third at some points during the season, which you never would have thought last year. So he really grew particularly at the offensive portion of his game. And I think when you combine that with how good he is defensively, that's where you're getting a lot of the push for most valuable player. Now, he's not going to win it. And frankly, he probably isn't going to finish very high in the voting. And the reason being is that voters typically don't value defense that much when they're thinking of these types of things. So his offensive numbers aren't going to compare to some of the guys who are out there hitting 40 home runs and driving in 100 runs. But when you look at Gomez as an entire package, as an offensive player, a guy who hits for some power, a guy who has raised his batting average pretty significantly this season, a guy who, when he gets on base, is always a threat to steal, and then you add in the defensive aspect of that, you've really got a guy playing at a premium defensive position who brings a lot to the table. And even if he doesn't get consideration for the most valuable player, the Brewers won't mind. They know they've found somebody who's going to be a key piece of their lineup for years going forward. And I think they thought he was going to be a nice player, and certainly defensively. I don't think they expected him to have this much effect offensively. And now he's here, and you hope that he can continue it going down the road.
And finally today, we have never talked about mixed martial arts on this show with you before. So why are we taking a minute today to talk about the world championship won by a man named Anthony Pettis, Why should we care?
You should care because here is a Milwaukee-born guy who has a heck of a backstory. His father was murdered when Anthony was a young boy. He basically dedicated his life to mixed martial arts, hooked up with a gentleman by the name of Duke Rufus, who was a world champion kickboxer, also out of Milwaukee. And basically, Anthony Pettis climbed the ranks, and now he is considered one of the best fighters in the UFC in the world. And he won the UFC lightweight championship right here in his hometown over the weekend at the BMO Harris Bradley Center. And it really was a special moment if you were there in the crowd, not only because of the atmosphere and the place was going crazy. He won in the first round. He submitted his opponent, Benson Henderson, with a move called an arm bar. It was the aftermath that really got to me, just watching the joy on Pettis' face, knowing the journey that it took to get to the top of the heap, all the hard work, all the heartache. He's really been beset by injuries. But the moment that really stuck with me was when he exited the cage and there was his mom waiting for him. And they just had this long embrace. And there's Pettis basically sobbing in her arms, tears of joy, certainly. No doubt thinking about his father, but it was just a really special moment. And then another one happened after the lights had gone out. Pettis had his new championship belt. He went to his father's grave, placed the belt above his father's grave, took a picture of it, and showed it to the world. And it really was just a very special moment. And you have to be happy for a man like that to reach the pinnacle of his profession after he's gone through so much.
One of the reasons we like sports.
Absolutely.
Howie, thanks.
Thank you.
Howie Magner writes the Sports Nut column for Milwaukee Magazine's website and is senior editor for the magazine and our regular sports contributor. One last break on Lake Effect Weekend and then the unique story of the area's newest art museum. Keep listening. We'll be back in a moment on WUWM.